This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5438. Now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey! How you going, everybody? John Fox here. Okay, Bob, this is spooky. It's happened again. Just like last week, as soon as my show starts, my voice disappears. How bizarre. Hi, everyone. What happened? I don't know. I'll have to figure it out later. There was a cat in here. That could have something to do with it. Oh, let's see. Yes. Kitty engineering. It all looks right. What's going on? Hey, there it is. I found it. Jesus. Oh, all right. What are we doing today? Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I was talking with my mates before, you know, Pete and Bob, about this whole thing with the Bali stage of the Kyoto process and how... And I guess this hasn't been reported in the States, is that the U.S. said it would join the, you know, consensus. They haven't signed Kyoto yet, but they're joining the consensus. So they were able to actually vote on some probable caps for 2009. But 2009, that's going to be, you know, got to have them, got to go. And so now, and, you know, the United States says this after being booed by the rest of the mob on the floor, then kind of conceding into this, what ended up being a weakened version of what some of us were hoping for. I get this really split feeling, and part of it is, you know, the holding off on concrete targets is just waiting. 2009, Bush will be gone. Okay? It's just like down to that. And there's something to be said about that. Get rid of the biggest stick in the mud, and you can move forward. You know, it's not that far down the road, so, you know, let's keep talking, and then once that goes by, then, you know, hopefully we'll have an administration in the United States, whoever gets in, that's a bit more wanting to play ball with the rest of the world on fighting, you know, this issue. So, at the Sydney Morning Herald, there's a piece on the cost of compliance. And when you get right down to it, the everyday costs in the end, it's not gonna like hit people in their hip pocket the way that they think. Okay, it's gonna end up being far less. However, there will be some adjustments, and when you really break it down, the investment that folks say, you know, 3% of GDP over 10 years. But that's over 10 years, so when you actually break it down, it's less than 0.1% of GDP a year it'll cost right now to get up to, say, you know, 40% reduction by 2050, I think. So, you know, get Bush out of the way, and we'll be able to move forward. You know, no sense, you know, continuing to bang one's head against the wall because it hurts. After a while, it just hurts. But the thing that I keep waiting to find out, you know, it's like the ghost that looms, is, okay, say pressure comes down and the United States kind of gets guilted into signing on to Kyoto. And then the election goes by and we end up with, God forbid, one of the Republican twats. What will be their get out of jail card to be able to ignore it and screw the whole process royally? And that honestly worries me. You know, they've been the stick in the mud, and until Bush is gone, there's kind of no hope. I mean, he's just dead to it. You know, he doesn't hear it. You know, he's all three monkeys. You know, hear no evil, speak no evil. You know, which is really unfortunate, because if they wanted to really come off as being responsible men, they would open their eyes and have a look and go, hey, we got a little problem here. And we got a big one around the corner, which we can maybe do something to avoid if we clean up our act. You can probably hear my cat. Yes, you're stuck there for the moment. Too bad. Anyway, but so, you know, when you think about it, 0.1%0.1% of GDP over 10 years, and that's a reduction in the profits. It's, you know, it's not an actual loss. So, you also then add in the benefits of healthcare costs coming down because the atmosphere is cleaner and other costs come down to where, you know, power generation only adds up to be about 3% of the national economy in the United States. So, you know, if that goes up even a good wallop, if we make adjustments to use less, which I think, and this piece in the City Morning Herald here, you know, says you know, similar, that, you know, it's the cost increasing on fossil fuels will force people to change. They will force people to go for new options. You know, the end of the oil era won't necessarily be because the oil ran out. It's because we found something that's better. I mean, that's how this needs to be looked at. Not in some, you know, cost only, because that's not the reality of it. There's so much to be won on the other side. So, you know, we need to have some pretty serious discussions about this kind of stuff, because when you look at it, the more we do now, the less it's going to cost in the long run. It's that simple. And I've been kind of looking around, and I really haven't seen much anywhere about the Bali agreement and the United States caving in the American media. I've seen it, you know, BBC, all the Australian media had it, of course, because Kevin Rudd was over there kind of going, "Hi, we're Australia. We're no longer an appendage. How are you?" It's probably been the best thing that people from all sides of politics can't argue with, is it's very nice to have the Prime Minister, regardless of who it is, you know, reintroduce Australia to the world, because Australia really did kind of, you know, drag its head inside the shell and just said, "We'll be right," you know, and, you know, "She'll be right, mate," just wasn't the right attitude to take there, because it wasn't right. Different things needed to happen. So I'll be very interested, and, you know, if anyone has seen any coverage of this at all, I'd love to know where you've seen it, because I have not been able to find it yet. I'm not saying that it's not out there. So, you know, will this actually translate to anything changing in Washington? I don't know, but the way they're reporting it is as though the United States buckled at the very, very end. And there was concessions from China and India. So, in fact, it's kind of a result where the United States should be really happy with it. I'll let you out in a minute. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of a whole new dawn, but there you go. The United States media, the story doesn't even... The story hasn't even, you know, kind of made a splash at all. So maybe, you know, need to start reminding your representatives that, you know, we did just actually agree to be part of the Kyoto process. I still don't think that they have an actual bargaining seat at the table yet. I think you actually have to sign on for that. But I tell you, the thing that really worries me, though, is that I shouldn't say nothing, but I don't think enough has been done. to deal with the voting fraud issues. You know, it like kind of doesn't matter what we do, how much opinion we change, if the vote's not going to actually count the way it's supposed to. One out cat. Yay! At least we won't have any more kitty engineering shutting things off on me. And I know that this has to, you know, has to be just really hard for George W. You know, absolutely just hellish for him. You know, having to be, we had to say what? What do you mean we have to, you know, act in accordance with the rest of the planet on something? And, you know, there was some fiery moments during the conference. A guy from, I think it was Papua New Guinea, just, you know, took the developed world on and said, you know, well, if you all don't want to, you know, get in on this, leave it to the rest of us that actually give a damn. Stop, you know, holding up progress, you know, and basically piss off. So, you know, I mean, it's... Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't even tell Bush. You know, I was even surprised that there was actually a United States delegation going. I figured it was something he'd ignore, but then he sent Larry Craig, right? And I don't know who the woman was, but when she announced that the United States, you know, were caving, it was as though there was a cockroach in her throat. She was not happy to be saying it, you know, and I think she was there with strict orders just to be a stick in the mud. And, you know, maybe, you know, damaged reputation and all that. Maybe international pressure actually is starting to have some effect. Is it getting weak at the seams, maybe? I don't know, but we'll try and figure it out. Let's take a break, Bob. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, and we'll be right back after this with something really, really just dumb. See you on the other side.
Okay, now, get ready to use your pop. Now listen to me. It was a reggae accident. I said a reggae accident. Make room for the band. A reggae accident.
Here they come.
A reggae accident.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is Billy Steele.
Join us this Thursday midnight Eastern on Foxed Up. We'll take a listen to the 1963 Christmas Fan Club message the Beatles recorded exclusively for the club members.
In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
And you'll hear a Christmas song recorded just for the club series. So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Gay and transgender people are part of every community.
We are your neighbors, your coworkers, your family.
If someone you know comes out, be willing to listen.
You have the power to make a difference by treating others with dignity and respect.
Choose to be an ally and a friend.
Find out how. Go to glad.org. That's GLAAD.org.
The headache, the bigger the pill, baby. Call me the big pill.
Ah, Funkadelic. Always nice. Always nice. Nice, Bob. Okay, now, you know, I get sent tons of stuff. And, you know, Betsy sends me some things that just sometimes you just got to stop and go, now, how the hell does this happen today? And an idiot could figure out that that probably isn't a good idea. In Fort Worth, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency knocked down an asbestos-laden building on Monday using a controversial wet demolition method. So they knocked down a building where they left all the asbestos intact, and they smeared special water on it, then special paste on it, then knocked it over. And then just by picking up the debris and 20 meters of soil, they're going, it's all good. Now, I think we all know enough about bloody asbestos and how, you know, only a small bit in the air can be ingested and cause severe problems. That this kind of technique, now mind you, you know, this has been developed because actually having to skin the building and remove all the asbestos with while pumping fresh air in for the workers, blah 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 blah, is, well, costly. They decide, we'll just smear it all with goo and knock it over. It'll stick together. I have my doubts. And so there's a bit of an investigation going on into whether or not, you know, this technique, which they'd like to use more of, you know, I'm sorry, you own a piece of property that now has asbestos and you need to remove it. Yeah, I think that there should be, you know, some assistance in helping you dispose of it, blah, 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 blah. But hey, it's your property. You got to kind of deal with it. It's a public health hazard. Sorry. It's a little bit of tough beans. You know, but, and I guarantee you that it's not, you know, the one home rebuilder operations that are needing to use this technique. It's the big development, you know, old apartment building outfit guys that want to rebuild and they just want to be able to just blow the thing up and drag it away. They don't want to have to dismantle any of it because, well, that takes actually employing people. But you can't tell me that in any way at any time there wasn't someone in this process that was going, hold on a second. Has anyone actually thought about what can happen when we blow one of these buildings up? Isn't there just a chance that some fibrous material? I mean, down here in Australia, we know the whole asbestos thing all too well, just thankfully due to Bernie Banton and him being a shining light on that particular issue and how you know, James Hardy, at least as a company, is just like the Antichrist. They'd do anything to try and screw these people, and still always are. You know, it was only a couple of days before he died, and they tried one last move in court to try and screw him out of his settlement. And he was dying from like two or three diseases that he got, working in the asbestos plants. And Gene's right in the chat room. You know, where's the jail time? Where's the fine? Where's the jail time? Seriously. But, you know, the EPA was involved in the operation. Huh? So, like, this is all part of a test to try and approve this as a usable technique in the future. I'd say no. I'd say no thanks. I just think it's mad. Absolutely mad. And there you go, Fort Worth, Texas. If you didn't look, you wouldn't know. It's just crazy. Ah! Mike Huckabee. Just flipping through, looking for my other links, and there's this thing that Bob was talking about. I'm an idiot. Just can't. Can't buy on to the fact that the guy could actually be a threat, but obviously he is. Mark said it. Bob said it. Peter said it. I find it thoroughly depressing that that would be the reality. Now, there's previously on this program, like back in the days of the morning slot, we talked a lot about all the different in development alternative energy vehicles that were out there, and we've talked about, you know, different electric vehicles, the Phoenix Motor Cars pickup truck, and Tesla Motors Tesla Roadster thing with, you know, 200Ks, blah, 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 blah. We've talked about the air car and whatnot. And recently there's been some shaky news coming out of a couple of the camps. One of the original developers involved with the Tesla Roadster has left in some sort of, doof-doof over concept issues. And so there's talk out of a couple of camps saying that before ever having actually produced a production vehicle that it could be a goner. But then again, there's a whole another couple of camps that are going, yeah, this has happened, but, you know, everything's still, you know, looking good. You know, there's actually a dealership somewhere in around L.A. that's just been, you know, is in construction right now. You know, they got the panels up, you know, covering up the construction site, you know, with big old, you know, Tesla Roadster, you know, painted on it, going, you know, dealership coming here soon. So, don't know if this is just, kind of like stirring the pot kind of journalism that's throwing this stuff out, or whether or not there's really trouble. And there's also some talk about the air car. Come across a couple of different articles recently talking about whether or not this thing's actually going to make it, but the thing about both of these lines of debate about both of these just have a similar air to me, and I've like seen so many different bits of footage of both of these vehicles in operation, and that I'm pretty confident that they're at least one of them's going to come to fruition. You know, not everything does, but, you know, there's been a whole lot of kind of just noise on the net recently, but yet it's been announced that the air car actually is going to start building there, aside from the plant already being built in India, they're building a plant down in Melbourne here. So for about $6,000 Australian, you will be able to buy an air car made in Melbourne, which I think is brilliant. I think that's fantastic. An air car, it said you can go as far as 150 to 200 kilometers. So you'd be talking about 110 to 140 miles, maybe. And what's cool is that I didn't realize is that one of the ways that you can recharge is actually just with the regular air compressor thing that you fill your tires with at the gas station. So you need to fill up. You can actually fill up. Just pull up, you know. Got to fill up your tires? No, got to fill up me car. And that, the version of it that can run dual fuel, which, you know, like any kind of combustible fuel from vegetable oil to biodiesel to regular diesel to petrol, it actually heats a tank, which then creates steam, which runs the regular compressed air piston system. So that's how the dual fuel thing works. It's not like a regular combustion engine running in tandem. It's actually just another way of creating the compression to get it going, which I think is just brilliant. So, you know, I'm gonna we'll keep an eye out, though. It just always worries me, you know, but always with new technologies and whatnot, there's going to be, you know, poo-pooing at moments, even the stuff that does actually work. But I just think, you know, I'd have one. There's a really good, this one of the articles I'm looking at is from theoildrum.com, which, sorry, I didn't get to post today. I've been busy. Still doing some work in the studio over here. And still on that Linux learning curve, that's been most interesting and most fulfilling, I must say. And very soon I'm going to do something very, very, I don't know, it's a large step, I reckon. I'm going to turn the laptop into a dual booter. So anyway, folks, let's take a break here, Bob. And you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, and we'll be right back after this. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, she gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. Say A, say M, say E, say R, say I.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Congratulations to Chris Dodd and Russ Feingold. They stood up to Bush, and they stood up to Harry Reid. On Monday, on the Senate floor, Harry Reid, ostensibly the majority leader of the Democrats, tried to do Bush's business by introducing a FISA bill that would have let the NSA spy on us without warrants and would have immunized the telecom companies from liability for illegally violating our privacy. Dodd vowed to filibuster the bill, and he and Feingold took to the Senate floor to thunder against this unconstitutional legislation. It's amazing that Bush wanted to go to the mat for the telecom companies. That's got nothing to do with keeping America safe from terrorism and everything to do with Bush coddling his corporate cronies and the criminals in the suites. Even more amazing, though, is that Reid was prepared to go along with this. Only the principled stand by Dodd and by Feingold and a handful of others forced Reid to pull the bill off the floor. Harry Reid has forfeited his right to be majority leader. He's not a leader. He's a follower. He doesn't stand up to Bush. He caves to Bush repeatedly, whether on the surge or on this. The Democrats need a majority leader who's not weak-kneed. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenue oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
That kicked ass. What is that, Bob? Wow. That was kick ass. That's huge. So anyway, so this piece at the oil drum about the air car, you know, there's been a lot of claims made, and, you know, is the thing for real? Like I said, this is, you know, just started kind of gurgling up recently. It says, the company is claiming the vehicles will be able to attain speeds of 110 kilometers an hour and travel 150 kilometers on compressed air alone. There was an article in The Age also mentions the hybrid mode of operation where the air is heated using a fuel source such as ethanol or diesel, which could make it possible to travel from Perth to Brisbane without refueling. It's a pretty good distance. It's a damn good distance. The car is refueled by plugging it into the compressed air supply found at most service stations, and founder Louis Arnoux is claiming that the engine technology could also be used to power homes. In other words, it is another way of implementing the vehicle-to-grid, or V2G, concept, which would be an interesting development as one of the main obstacles for this idea, once plug-in hybrids appear in significant numbers, is the impact of constantly discharging and recharging on battery lifespans, although recent developments in this area are promising too. Compressed air is similar to hydrogen, and it is an energy storage medium, not an energy source. And it's, so it's similar to the way in the solar geothermal systems where you have tanks or underground, which I don't really like as much, where you store the excess steam supported by the solar panels during the day, and then at night you run the system in reverse by releasing the captured excess steam, which is energy. So this is a really similar thing. And the energy transfer of 1 cubic meter of air can be really rather dramatic. So if the claims are true, I think that there's a lot to be said about this particular technology, because if you're able to go across Australia, basically, Perth to Brisbane, that's a long way. That'd be easily New York to Dallas. You know, so I think it's I think it's a genius. I think it's a genius one, especially you consider that if it's so easy to charge, you know, that's got to be pennies. You know, compared to even the dirtiest coal electric generation. So, you know, I can't see how, if this is viable. And continues on here, it says, the air car has gotten the press excited on and off over the years. The French design, which has received the most publicity, uses compressed air as an energy delivery mechanism. It has the potential for providing a clean burning solution, but as usual, it takes net energy to compress the air. No free lunch, unless wind or solar energy is involved to run the air compressors. And even there, we require energy to make the windmills and solar conversion devices. However, there's some... there's something that's not in that reasoning, though. If you set up systems so that, like, plug-in hybrid cars and these kind of cars charged overnight, it actually can be good for the grid. And we now have cat number two. Pardon moi.
Go on.
I usually remember to get them out before the show. I forgot. But what it says here is there's 1 gigajoule, 30 liters of gasoline is kind of the standard conversion ratio. And nitrogen kind of gets up to the same level, and they show these compressed air systems at 70% of that already at the moment. So, I mean, I really think it's more viable than people give it credit for. And this one doesn't have all the kind of, you know, founding, brains behind the project has just walked off situation going on. So, I mean, but the Tesla Roadster was always, you know, that cutting edge, pushing it, that kind of the gearhead aspect of the green movement of saying, you know, disproving the myth that being green means that it's not fast, you know, it has to be wimpy, which isn't the case, just because electric motors, the torque, it just takes off from nothing to full on, which no petrol or diesel motor can even come anywhere near comparing to. So I'm glad to hear that one of these looks like it's coming to Melbourne, because at the moment, the Australian automobile manufacturing, you know, community is seriously held up by the Australian taxpayer. I've read a couple times that on average, every Australian pays $1,000 personally to keep Holden open. And I sit there and think, I don't drive because I don't want to support the dirty industry. And so I'm paying into it anyway. And if you have to be subsidizing it that much, and they're so behind on technology, where the new government has new fuel efficiency standards for government vehicles, and there was no Australian manufacturer that could make the grade that they had set. So they've actually gone around other Australian law that they're actually going to import greener, cleaner cars from overseas for Australian government use. So I would think it would be better to throw some of the subsidies at outfits like this that are looking to actually create something that maybe people want more. Or not so much even want more, that they're going to need more. I think there's a situation here where if we can fill needs. I mean, if I could have a small vehicle that I could hop in and go and do, you know, virtually everything that I want to do every week and never actually have to pull into a petrol station. Yahoo! Sounds good to me. Works for me. And, you know, they have a few different versions. So, you know, we'll continue to keep an eye on this. This is the first hiccup. And, you know, so has this been kind of coordinated by a couple people in the media that want to, you know, create some doubt out in the community whether, you know, these things, you know, will actually come about? Not everyone ever will. That's part of the thing. You know, that's part of the reality is when it comes to developing new technology, sometimes even the best ideas just don't quite come. So that's why you have to try a whole bunch of things. Then you get a whole bunch of possibilities, even if only half of them work out to be a viable replacement for things that we do now. So, you know, I've been kind of all over the place today. just that kind of day. And, you know, and I've really, things when it comes to, like, environmental issues globally are so kind of in a bit of flux at the moment. Got to kind of see how things settle after this, if not toned down, but still so much, so kind of like fundamental event just went by. And so there's going to be a lot of reading and there's going to be a lot of discussion. And the next step is the economies get together. And I think that that's where they get to try and talk about where the different states can come up with the funding to get projects rolling. And so that's 2009, you know, and the whole idea is that this all leads to the Kyoto Mark II U-Butte thing that takes effect in 2012. But one of the things that they did say is that I've gotten the impression, and I haven't actually read all the documents yet, but I get the impression that there is kind of written in there the urgency to actually move forward sooner than the timeline, which I also think shows some interesting intention. Like, again, once George W. Bush is out of the picture and can't be a stick in the mud, and maybe there will be a little bit more sense of reality coming out of the United States, then the process can kind of sit down and say, ha, okay, everybody, let's work on this. Because at the moment, you know, it's the consensus of the world and the United States. You know, Bob mentioned, you know, China and Russia. And, yeah, fair enough. But, I mean, shouldn't that actually be part of the debate? You know, people from not just, you know, way this side and way that side, but having some people that kind of, you know, span the, you know, possibilities. You know, if it's too cut and dry, that would make me worry. That would actually make me worry. And the Russians are probably also doing it a little bit. They're in kind of muscle showing mode. You know what I mean? In other ways as well. I think that there's something very creepy going on in Russia at the moment. I don't like it. I don't like this guy that's setting himself up to be kind of like installed back into his old job routine. Putin's starting to worry me the same way that Chavez has been starting to worry me, but actually Putin a bit more. Chavez, it's addiction to petrol money. Putin, it's much more an overall control thing. And that really worries me. All right, Bob, let's take the last break for the evening. You're listening to Foxed Up here. John Fox coming to you from Sydney, Australia, here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. And we'll be right back after this.
Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you have been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid?
My fondest memory of music class is kind of just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted really long time, at least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Bob's having fun. Nice. I don't know. My head just seems to be swimming these days just because, one, I'm really busy with my job. It's, you know, the holiday season. We had a, you know, one of those dinner things that you do during the holidays, doing business things and, you know, and it's just been kind of madness. And I really feel like down here, there's still this massive, you know, that the bones are still falling, you know, and where things go from here is a whole lot more open than it was before. And so it feels really confused down here. And I get this impression with, you know, just following along with the local blogs. And, you know, you even still have people saying, you know, I had to pinch myself again this morning and say, nope, still not a dream. Howard's gone. And, you know, but it's going to be, you know, you, anytime you have a change, a really, you know, a full-on change of government, there's always expectations and ideals that you think, you know, you think and hope are going to be held to. And, I mean, so far, we've seen great strides in trying to hammer home the message that, that they're going to do exactly what they said that they'd do. Now, they're running into the first thing that, where, now that they're in office, economically, what they said that they would do might not be the best course of action. Which would mean very possibly reneging on some tax cuts is the train of thought that's going around at the moment. And if it actually ends up being what is good policy, do you hold it against him? And I say, if he's open and honest with the people, I say, hell no, and you let him do it, if it's what needs to happen. However, they're laying the groundwork of trying to maintain good policy and changing direction. And folks still don't know exactly what that direction is going to be, because it's just all kind of, you know, it's amazing. I forgot how this happens, that kind of the slate just gets kind of like wiped clean. And all of a sudden it's all new. You know, you didn't have to undo, you didn't have to unscrew, you didn't have to go cleaning up after, and suddenly it's like a whole new day, and you go, wait a minute, okay, you mean we get to, like, just write it all over from the beginning? Hoo-hoo-hoo! And that's actually one of the great things about watching a democracy work, and like I said, I'm really worried that in the United States we are going to do all this work, and we're not actually going to see democracy work. It'll fail again. That it'll be manipulated again. Games will be played again. And again, the people will lose. And that really scares the bejesus out of me, to be perfectly honest. but anyway, let's wrap it up, folks. Because I think we're running out of time. So thanks to Bob for producing today. Thanks to Scott Barry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. And thanks to you for hanging out with us today. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Those of you that were listening to me last week know that I was speaking from the heart. I was quite upset, indeed, at my show last Thursday. Ranting, one might even say. Angry. Not at the Republicans, but at the Democrats. Oh, sure, I was angry at the Republicans. After all, they were the people who were putting us, and I do consider Democrats us, we are all friends, but putting us in this difficult position. The president would veto good bill after good bill. The Republicans in the Senate would filibuster good bill after good bill. And the Democrats were presented with, well, either they could pass pretty much what the Republicans wanted, or they could pick up the ball and go home and the government would shut down. And I argued as early as last week, before last Tuesday's show, on my blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, I have a post that says, please do nothing, Congress. Do nothing. The Truman Do Nothing Congress would be better than caving in constantly to the Republicans. And by the way, if you haven't read this on my blog, why not? Have you gone to RadioInsideScoop.com lately? Have you posted on the blog? We have some great discussions there. Check it out if you haven't. In any case, I wrote this up on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com, and then Tuesday, my last day of Hanukkah, a miracle appeared to happen. Some Democrats were fighting back. David Obey, chairman of the Appropriations Committee, a Democratic congressman from Wisconsin, said, you know, we're just not going to take scraps from the Republicans. If they won't play ball, if they won't negotiate,